Hello, and welcome to Words on Film, the spoken word podcast dedicated to moving pictures. I'm Dan Burke, your host and movie critic, and I'm here to tell you exactly what I think of some of the latest movies out right now.
On March 10th, 2024, the Academy Awards finally went underway. On March 9th, the night before, the Golden Raspberry Awards happened. And today is my 11th annual post-Oscar and Razzie reaction show. This is where I go over some of the predictions that I made on last week's show, and I gloat about the ones that I got right, and also kind of harbor very, very deep resentment for the ones I got wrong. That's largely pertaining to the Oscars. As for the Razzies, it turns out that a lot of the movies that were nominated for Razzies, I haven't actually seen. But I'll still react to them nonetheless on the second half of the show. But let's get going with the movies that were nominated, what I thought will win, and what I thought, well, what I thought would win, and what I thought should win, and so on and so forth. So I'm going to go over what I thought were going to win. So last week I went through each and every category and listed the nominations as well. I'm not going to list the nominations, but I will get through as many categories as I can in the order that they are presented to me. And I'm going to start with Best International Feature Film. On last week's show, I predicted that The Zone of Interest would win Best International Feature, and I was right. And I have this instinct. It's actually not an instinct. It seems to be sort of a given that the international feature that is nominated for Best Picture, even if it's not the favorite to win, if it's the only one that's nominated for Best International Feature Film, it will win. It's actually kind of mysterious to me that another movie, Anatomy of a Fall, which was also an international feature and was also nominated for Best Picture, was not nominated for Best International Feature Film. If it was, it would have made this category a little tougher to call. But The Zone of Interest was an excellent film, and it's a film that's getting a lot of buzz even still around America these days, even though it is a German film that's directed by a British man. But my feeling is that The Zone of Interest is going to be a movie that a lot of people are going to go back to, in addition to a similar themed film like Schindler's List, and rewatch. Because movies in the 90s that took place in Europe in World War II, like Schindler's List and Life is Beautiful, and that's just to name a few, are still getting a lot of praise, even amongst people who aren't cinematic experts to this day. And I feel like The Zone of Interest is also going to get that similar praise. Now on to Best Documentary Short Film. I predicted that the film that was going to win was The Last Repair Shop. And I also said that it should win. And sure enough, it did. And I'm very happy that it did, because even though the other four films that were nominated for Best Documentary Short Film were excellent short films, The Last Repair Shop was, in my opinion, the best. And apparently it was in the majority of the Academy's opinion. So there you go. So that's two categories that I got right. Now on to Best Live-Action Short Film. Now, what I said for this one was, I predicted that The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar, which is directed by Wes Anderson, would win. But I also said that Red, White, and Blue should win. And sure enough, I was correct about the winner, because The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar did win. I didn't think it was the best of the five. As I said, I thought Red, White, and Blue was the best, but The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar had an all-star cast. It had an ostentatious budget. It certainly made the most out of set design. It also had that very quirky sense of humor for which Wes Anderson is known. Also, I think the fact that Wes Anderson's mainstream feature film, Asteroid City, was nominated for absolutely nothing may have factored into that, because a lot of members of the Academy were in that film. And I think that some people were also behind the scenes as well. Was it retribution? Maybe, but I predicted that The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar would win because of all the reasons that I mentioned. So that's 3-0 for me. Now we get to Best Animated Short Film. This is one I will admit that I got wrong. I said that the movie that should win and will win is Letter to a Pig. I still attest that Letter to a Pig was the best of the five animated short films. However, War is Over, which was inspired by the music of John Lennon and Yoko Ono, won instead. And I think that this was War is Over in my pre-Oscar review for the short animated films. I think this was number four on what I thought were the best films. Now, that is by no means saying it's one of the worst. It's just, in my opinion, not the best of the best of the best. And I still stand by it. But, you know, it was actually kind of nice to see Sean Lennon, in addition to Dave Mullins and Brad Booker, get this Oscar. And also, surprisingly enough, Yoko Ono is 93 years old, and it was nice for Sean Lennon to wish Yoko Ono a happy Mother's Day. And you might be thinking, why were a bunch of British people wishing their mothers a happy Mother's Day in March when Mother's Day is 2 months from now? My own mother would probably say, every day is Mother's Day. Good point, Mom. But actually, Mother's Day is celebrated in March in Great Britain. But I haven't forgotten Mother's Day in May, so Mom, you will be receiving a gift and a card from me around that time. But even though War is Over was won with the best intentions, I still thought Letter to a Pig, which came from Iran, was the best of the animated features, so I got that one wrong. Now on to Best Animated Feature Film. I believe that I said that the movie that will win is The Boy and the Heron, and the one that should win was Elemental. I think that's what I said. And I thought that Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse might pull off an upset here. But I believe that I got this one right because The Boy and the Heron won Best Animated Feature Film. And I think that the reason I said that was because this is a film that was directed by Hayao Miyazaki. Is it one of his best films? In my opinion, no. But it's still a very unique and original film. Plus, it is likely to be Hayao Miyazaki's last feature that he directs. But who knows? The film that he directed before The Boy and the Heron was thought to be his last feature as well. We'll just find out if it is his last feature when he dies. But The Boy and the Heron won for Best Animated Feature. I still thought Elemental should have won, but it was good for The Boy and the Heron to win. And I admired The Boy and the Heron for not only having amazing animation, but also telling a unique and original story. And I did also say that Best Animated Feature Film was a tough call this year. So for me, my correct predictions are 4 correct ones, 1 incorrect one so far. Moving on to Best Documentary Feature, I'll just tell you right now, I still have not seen any of the Best Documentary Features, but I will make a resolution for next year when I do this show during the Oscar season. When the Oscar nominees for Best Documentary Feature are announced, I will go out of my way to see these features. And with streaming, it's actually easier to see these features. Unfortunately, with algorithms and things like that, these documentary features don't come to a lot of people's main frames when they're on Netflix, Amazon Prime, Hulu, you name it. So, Best Documentary Feature was one that I kind of knew I was going to get wrong because I just chose a movie at random without having seen it. I chose Bobby Wine, The People's President, but I didn't say that any of these should win because I hadn't seen any of them. So, 20 Days in Mariupol won instead. And if I had read the description of the plot of this documentary and saw that it took place in Ukraine during the Russian War, and it was about a filmmaker's attempt to get out of Mariupol, Ukraine, as he's fighting for his life, I would have absolutely chosen that one the winner. But I didn't know that. But it was great for Mstislav Chernov to go up there and accept his award. And he also gave one of the best speeches of Oscar night when he accepted his award. And it made me want to stand up and cheer, but I couldn't exactly do that because I was watching the ceremony on TV. But, you know. So, my record right now, as of this point of the show, 4 correct predictions, 2 incorrect predictions. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Words on Film, the spoken word show dedicated to moving pictures. I am your host and movie critic, Dan Burke, continuing with what I got right and what I got wrong at last week's Oscar ceremony. And now I've reached the category of best achievement in visual effects. I predicted that Godzilla Minus One would win in this category, and I also lamented how Godzilla Minus One was not nominated for best international feature. But sure enough, this is one that I got correct. And the other nominees in this category, especially The Creator, which is a film that got a bunch of technical nominations but no wins, certainly had potential to win in this category. But the Godzilla in Godzilla Minus One was A, the best looking Godzilla in probably all the Godzilla movies, arguably, and B, the special effects that they had for not only how Godzilla looked but also how he wreaked havoc was amazing. It wasn't the only thing that made Godzilla Minus One great, but it was certainly one of its best assets. So that is a correct one for me. Best achievement in music written for the motion pictures, i.e. original song. Now, I predicted that Billie Eilish would win for the song for What Was I Made For? And sure enough, I got that one correct. And the big reason that I knew that Barbie was going to win one or the other one being I'm Just Ken, was that the other three movies weren't especially well known for their music. For instance, the movie Flamin' Hot, which was a Hulu and Disney Plus original, which I regretfully didn't see yet, but I will. I don't know if I'm going to review it for the show, but I'll see it, is a film that I don't exactly know if a lot of people remember that song. And it usually tends to go that the songs that are, let's say, the biggest hits or the ones from the most talked about movies are the ones that generally win. Is that what they deserve? Not necessarily, but I do think that Billie Eilish's song for What Was I Made For? I was trying to put that in grammatically correct language, but it's not the actual name of the song. I was going to say for what was I made, but What Was I Made For? That's the title of the song. I thought it was the best of the five, even though all five songs are excellent. And also, Billie Eilish's performance of What Was I Made For? I got it right again. Was undoubtedly the highlight of the actual Oscar ceremony. But I'll get into the Oscar ceremony a little bit later. So, seven correct, two incorrect so far. Moving on to best achievement in music written for motion pictures. Best original score. I predicted that Oppenheimer would win. Well, actually, no, I did. I got this one wrong. I predicted that Robbie Robertson would win for Killers of the Flower Moon, and I still think that that movie should have won. And I'm not necessarily saying that because Robbie Robertson died last year and it should be awarded posthumously. But I'm not disappointed that Oppenheimer won for its quality of music. I just think that the music in Killers of the Flower Moon was better and more memorable in this instance. But Oppenheimer won. I'm just disappointed that I was incorrect. So that for me is seven correct, three incorrect. Moving on to the category of best achievement in makeup and hairstyling. Now, for this one, I predicted that Poor Things was going to win, and lo and behold, I was correct. I thought that Maestro might pull off an upset because the makeup that was made for Bradley Cooper to resemble Leonard Bernstein was excellent, especially as the on-screen Leonard Bernstein got older. But Poor Things, I thought, had the best makeup of the five movies that were nominated, especially on Willem Dafoe, where he sort of played kind of a patchwork mad scientist. It is too bad that Willem Dafoe didn't get nominated, and I probably would have preferred to have seen him nominated over Mark Ruffalo, even though I like Mark Ruffalo very much. But I'm still happy that Poor Things won in this category, and that is the eighth correct prediction, in addition to three incorrect predictions. Moving on to best sound. Now, this one was one that got a lot of people upset. And I think that when I was talking about this film, I went out on a limb and I said that The Zone of Interest would win for best sound and should win. But I also acknowledged that Oppenheimer also had excellent sound. All five nominees did. But I said that there is a possibility that Oppenheimer will win. Fortunately, I went with my instincts, and boom, The Zone of Interest won for Best Sound, and I think this movie absolutely deserved to win Best Sound. This wasn't a given, especially when you consider that the things that are going on screen as you're watching them are relatively mild, but the things that go on off screen, especially when you see the smoke and you hear the sounds that are coming from next door, you know horrific things are happening. And that would not have been possible, an effect, without the great sound that was in The Zone of Interest. So that's 9 correct predictions, 3 incorrect ones so far. Moving on to Best Achievement in Costume Design. So this is another one that I got wrong. I predicted that Barbie would win for Best Achievement in Costume Design. And one of the things that I appreciated about the Barbie movie, even though I didn't exactly love it, was the attention to detail. Now, maybe Greta Gerwig and Noah Baumbach, who wrote the screenplay to Barbie, with Greta Gerwig directing, might not have been huge fans of Barbie by the time they were teenagers, and my guess is Noah Baumbach didn't play with them when he was a kid, but I could have been wrong about that. But the attention to detail shows that there were some people who grew up playing with Barbies and appreciate them as they get older. Plus, you know, the costumes were great in that film. But Poor Things ended up winning for Best Achievement in Costume Design. And even though I got this one wrong, I still think that Barbie should have won in this category. But Poor Things also had some great costumes in it as well. I just thought Barbie should have been the winner in this case. Moving on to Best Achievement in Production Design. This is another one that I got incorrect. I predicted that Barbie would get this, and Poor Things won instead. Now, unlike Best Achievement in Costume Design, I actually think Poor Things was deserving of production design. I am just so pissed that I got this one wrong. But Poor Things did have some amazing production design. Like, for example, when Emma Stone and Mark Ruffalo are on that cruise, not only the way the cruise ship looked, but also the way the sky looked, and also some of the sights that they see, including one of those broken down monuments that they explore. I thought that was really well done, and I'm just miffed at myself for getting that one wrong. So, it's 9 correct and 5 incorrect for me. Welcome back to Words on Film, the spoken word show dedicated to moving pictures. I am your host and movie critic, Dan Burke. Continuing with what I got right and what I got wrong in my guesses for the movies that were going to win Oscars. Now, up to this point, the categories that I've covered, I got 9 correct and 5 incorrect as of right now. On to Best Achievement in Film Editing. I predicted last week that Oppenheimer would win for Best Film Editing, and lo and behold, I was correct. Now, film editing is a tough one, but I think that I said that the film that I think does not even deserve to be nominated, let alone should win, is Poor Things. And I got into that last week. I'm just going to keep going here. Oppenheimer did have some amazing editing, especially when it came to seeing what was going on through J. Robert Oppenheimer's mind as he is celebrating the success of being instrumental in creating the atomic bomb, as well as going through a lot of his conscience. So that's 10 wins that I got correct, 5 that I got incorrect. Moving on to Best Cinematography. I think for this one, this is another tough call. I said that Killers of the Flower Moon should win and Oppenheimer will win, and I got this one wrong. Oppenheimer ended up winning. I probably should have gone with my instinct on this one. And I think that Killers of the Flower Moon definitely had some amazing cinematography, but then again, so did Oppenheimer. So I'll count myself wrong for that one. So that's 10 guesses correct and 6 incorrect for Best Cinematography. Moving on to Best Adapted Screenplay. Now for this one, I said that Oppenheimer will win, but American Fiction should win. Sure enough, I was wrong. in terms of what will win, but I had the right instinct when it came to what should win, but it was still an incorrect guess for me. I'm very, very happy that American Fiction won for Best Adapted Screenplay. It's Cord Jefferson with his first nomination and his first win. Way to go for Cord Jefferson. I thought it was an amazing screenplay. I'm just disappointed that I got it wrong. I probably should have gone with my instinct on that one, but I'm very happy to see American Fiction win an Academy Award, let alone one for Best Adapted Screenplay, because it certainly was a great screenplay. Now moving on to Best Original Screenplay. This is one that I got wrong, and I am miffed that I got this one wrong. I said that The Holdovers will win, and I thought that it should win, with a potential upset from Past Lives. Instead, the winner of this category is Anatomy of a Fall, and even though Anatomy of a Fall is an excellent film, I still thought The Holdover should have won Best Original Screenplay for the reason that it felt like an adaptation. It felt like something that was adapted from a book written by somebody like John Irving or Tobias Wolff, but it wasn't. And for that reason, I feel like it was so intricate and so detailed in terms of its characterization that it didn't feel like it was an original screenplay. Anatomy of a Fall, on the other hand, had a good trial in it, and I'm actually kind of surprised that it won this award in the United States, because there are a lot of practices here that take place in a French court that would not fly in an American court, but Anatomy of a Fall was probably the biggest upset of the night, and I'm certainly upset that I got this one wrong, but it's 10 right predictions and 7 wrong predictions for me. Now on to Best Achievement in Directing. I said last week Christopher Nolan will win. Sure enough, he did. And I'm very happy that I got that one right, so that's 11 correct predictions for me. On to Best Performance by an Actress in Supporting Role. I said Divine Joy Randolph will win. I got that one right too. Probably not a huge surprise, but I also think that Divine Joy Randolph deserved to win, and I hope to see her in other things from here on out. Sure enough, she's been in a lot of films previously. Actually, she was one of the voice actors in the last Puss in Boots movie, which I didn't know until I looked her up on IMDb, but hopefully she gets a lot of other roles as well. But 4 out of the 5 actresses in this category were great. I discount Jodie Foster and Naiad because I haven't seen Naiad yet, but Divine Joy Randolph had the best performance, so good for the Academy for getting that one right. Best performance by an actor in a supporting role. I said Robert Downey Jr. will win. Sure enough, probably one of the lesser surprises of the night. It's his 3rd nomination, his 1st win. Good for Robert Downey Jr. He absolutely deserved to win for Oppenheimer. He made a great antagonist, and it wasn't just the lines he spoke. It was also some of the ways that he looked as well, but really good for Robert Downey Jr. Moving on to Best Actress in a Leading Role, and I'll tell you right now, I said that Lily Gladstone will win and should win. I got this one wrong. Emma Stone won for Poor Things. And I like Emma Stone. Of course, she deserved to win a couple of years ago when she was in La La Land. I didn't think she was as deserving to win for Poor Things, but a lot of people are very happy that she won. I still think Lily Gladstone turned in the best performance of the year, but I'm still semi-happy for Emma Stone. I'm just kind of disappointed that I got this one wrong. So that is the 8th prediction that I got wrong. Moving on to Best Performance by an Actor in a Leading Role. I said last week Cillian Murphy would win, Paul Giamatti should win, but the one that I predicted would win did win. Cillian Murphy won for Best Actor in a Leading Role. I got that one right. And the final category, which amazingly I got through all these categories in 30 minutes, is Best Picture. I predicted that Oppenheimer was going to win, and sure enough, it did win. And that's all there is to say. I got more right than I did wrong. I still attest that for most of the categories where I got wrong, I probably picked the right winners, if I do say so myself. But it was still not an incredibly predictable year for the Oscars. And if you took my predictions, went to Las Vegas, put your nest egg on the line and didn't win as much money as you should, well, don't blame me for that, because I did not tell you to go to Vegas and gamble on these possible winners. But I'm really happy with how I did overall. Of course, I predicted that one of the categories in the short films I would get wrong. Well, turns out that I did. So there you go. But I'm really happy with my Oscar predictions this year. And I might as well give you take a brief moment, even though I'm not a TV critic, to tell you that I was actually really impressed with the Oscars this year. They lasted about 3.5 hours, but it was good of them to set it early. I thought that it was pretty well paced. Jimmy Kimmel did a commendable job as host, and he's certainly up there with Bob Hope, Johnny Carson, and Billy Crystal as kind of the go-to by default person to host the Oscars, but he does a commendable job, and the fact that I'm placing him up there with Bob Hope and Billy Crystal is probably commendable to him. There are some other people who I'd like to see eventually host the Oscars, but Jimmy Kimmel was a good go-to host, and overall, I liked the ceremony, and I even liked how I got more wins correct than I did incorrect. Welcome back to Words on Film, the spoken word show dedicated to moving pictures. I am your host and movie critic, Dan Burke, and I've given you my predictions for what would win for the various categories at the Oscars. Now it's time to delve into the Golden Raspberry Awards for this year, which, as by tradition, take place the night before the Oscar ceremony. So this year, I don't know if the Razzies were given a telecast. They probably weren't broadcast on TV, but they were probably streamed. And from what I heard, nobody came up to accept their Razzie Awards. So unlike the Oscar categories, I will give you the nominations in this category for Worst Actor, or rather all the categories. So I'm going to start with Worst Actor and kind of work my way down. Actually, you know what? I'm going to start with Worst Picture. So the nominees for Worst Picture here are Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey, Expendables, Meg 2, The Trench, Shazam, Fury of the Gods, and The Exorcist Believer. The winner in this category is actually not surprising. It's Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey. And lo and behold, even though this movie got horrific reviews, it got a sequel coming out this year. Am I going to see that sequel? Yeah, I am. But oh my gosh, it is amazing to me that they're still kind of soldiering on with a sequel, even though this Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey got torn to shreds. So now onto the category of Worst Actor. Let's start there. The nominees for this category are Chris Evans for Ghosted, Russell Crowe for The Pope's Exorcist, Vin Diesel for Fast X, Jason Statham for Meg 2, The Trench, and John Voight for Mercy. The winner in this category is John Voight for the movie Mercy. And Mercy is a film that I haven't seen, let alone heard. I haven't heard of it, let alone seen it. But it's a movie about a doctor and a former military officer who finds herself in a deadly battle for survival when the Irish mob takes control of the hospital where she works and her son is taken hostage. So it's somewhat of a confusing story. And John Voight has not turned in some really good performances recently. This guy is an Academy Award winner, for God's sake. But I think his right-wing politics, in addition to what I believe might be his dementia, might be contributing to his faltering in his movies of choice over the last nearly 25 years. But I can't speak to how bad he was in this movie because I haven't actually seen it. So on to the category of worst actress. For worst actress, the nominees are Megan Fox for Johnny and Clyde, Ana de Armas for Ghosted, Helen Mirren for Shazam Fury of the Gods, Jennifer Lopez for The Mother, and Salma Hayek for Magic Mike's Last Dance. So I can tell you this. I reviewed Shazam Fury of the Gods, The Mother, and Magic Mike's Last Dance, and I didn't have a problem with any of the actresses in that movie. Shazam Fury of the Gods had some problems. I didn't hate it. But Helen Mirren, I thought, was serviceable in it. I thought Jennifer Lopez was actually very good in The Mother. Granted, it wasn't an Academy Award-worthy performance, but I still thought she made a serviceable action hero as well as a believable one. And Salma Hayek I actually really liked in Magic Mike's Last Dance, even though, like Shazam Fury of the Gods, I wasn't crazy about that movie. But at least the right person won for this category, who is Megan Fox in Johnny and Clyde. Now, even though I haven't seen Johnny and Clyde, and it's a movie about two serial killers who are madly in love and on an endless crime spree, which kind of sounds like an even darker Mr. and Mrs. Smith, I know that Megan Fox doesn't really care about her acting or her performance in movies, which is why she's probably going to get Razzies until she actually feels like she cares about the movie in which she's acting. So it's really no surprise she won this award. I would have been disappointed if Helen Mirren, Jennifer Lopez, or Salma Hayek would have won. Moving on to Worst Director. The nominees are David Gordon Green for The Exorcist Believer, Rhys Frake Waterfield for Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey, Peyton Reed for Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania, Scott Waugh for Expendables, and Ben Wheatley for Meg 2 The Trench. So, Rhys Frake Waterfield won here for Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey, and honestly, it's not too much of a surprise since Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey was undoubtedly the worst of the other four nominees for Worst Director. I am kind of surprised considering that Shazam Fury of the Gods was nominated for Worst Picture, but Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania's director won for Worst Director. I wonder why that is. Why, I mean, with Best Director at the Oscars, that's one thing. And almost always, the person who's nominated for Best Director has their movie nominated for Best Picture. That is almost always the case, and there are almost no exceptions to that rule. But I wonder why Peyton Reed was nominated for Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania. Is Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania the best of the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies? Absolutely not. But I still didn't think it was that bad, you know? And I would probably say that Shazam Fury of the Gods, even though I wasn't incredibly disappointed by that movie either, although I will acknowledge that it wasn't a great sequel to what was otherwise a solid superhero movie, Shazam, and it was a lot better than a lot of other DC Extended Universe movies, which have been hobbling on so much that the last Aquaman movie is the final DCEU movie. DC is finally just giving up on that franchise and starting from scratch, which is good for them. But again, you know, lesson learned. Moving on to worst prequel, remake, ripoff, or sequel. The nominees are Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania, Expendables, The Exorcist Believer, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, and Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey. So, for this category, Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey wins. It's honestly not that surprising that it did. It got scathing reviews, and yet they're still making a sequel to this category. Go figure. But anyway, Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey is the winner of this one. And I still don't think Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania should have gotten worst prequel, remake, ripoff, or sequel. And it's curious to me that Shazam! Fury of the Gods was nominated for Worst Picture, but it was not nominated in this category of Worst Prequel, Remake, Ripoff, or Sequel. That is very puzzling to me. And yet, Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania is. And yeah, Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania fell short for a number of reasons, but it had a lot of potential. I don't know how you can hate Paul Rudd, and the Razzie Committee didn't because they didn't nominate him for Worst Actor, and they didn't nominate anybody in this film in the acting category except for one supporting category, which I'll get to in a moment. Welcome back to Words on Film, the spoken word show dedicated to moving pictures. I am your host and movie critic, Dan Burke, continuing with my going over the categories, the nominees, and the winners in the Golden Raspberry Awards for this year, 2024. The Golden Raspberry Awards were held on March 9th, 2024, and I'm just giving you what the nominees and the winners are, as well as the problems I have with certain nominees. So on to the category of Worst Screen Couple, as I promised before the break. The nominees are, in this category, The Exorcist, Believer, Expendables, Ghosted, Magic Mike's Last Dance, and Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey. Now, the Worst Screen Couple here are considered to be, in this category, Winnie the Pooh and Blood and Honey. Expendables is basically the entourage of action heroes who are assembled here. Exorcist Believer, the category, or rather the couple here, is probably the devil and his victims. Ghosted, the worst couple here, is Ana de Armas and Chris Evans. And Magic Mike's Last Dance, the couple here, is Salma Hayek and Channing Tatum. Now, what's interesting here is that I can't speak for Ghosted because I haven't seen it, but I have seen Magic Mike's Last Dance, and even though I didn't like it as much as I did the other two Magic Mike films, or to be honest, Magic Mike XXL, because I haven't seen the original Magic Mike film, I thought that the chemistry between Salma Hayek and Channing Tatum was the best part of Magic Mike's Last Dance. So I think that they were nominated by default, and there could have been a better on-screen couple here. But Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey, I guess the worst screen couple is either Winnie the Pooh and Murder or the Blood and Honey. Either way, it's deserving of worst screen couple, and I really can't complain. I can't speak for Ghosted, as I said, but the other nominees, with the exception of Magic Mike's Last Dance, I think are appropriate. Now on to worst screenplay. The nominees for worst screenplay are The Exorcist Believer, Expendables, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, Shazam! Fury of the Gods, and Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey. So, Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey here wins for worst screenplay, and I think that is appropriate. And again, I don't exactly know why Shazam! Fury of the Gods was nominated for worst picture and worst screenplay, but was not nominated for worst director and worst ripoff, remake, or sequel. But I just don't really know how the voting for the screenplay actually is. So, or what the people were thinking when they listed the nominees. Something tells me I should apply to be a Golden Raspberry voter because I have a lot to say about bad films that came out in 2023. And some of the films that made my worst of the year weren't even nominated for the Golden Raspberry Awards, but more on that later. Now on to Worst Supporting Actor. The nominees here are Michael Douglas for Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, Mel Gibson for Confidential Informant, Bill Murray for Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, Franco Nero for The Pope's Exorcist, and Sylvester Stallone for Expendables. It is kind of interesting that Sylvester Stallone is listed first in the roster of actors who are in Expendables, and yet he's nominated here for Worst Supporting Actor. But I do think that's appropriate because Sylvester Stallone did cut out of Expendables early in the film. And I'm not going to tell you exactly why, but his nomination and his win in this category are appropriate. Bill Murray, I thought, was appropriately nominated here for Worst Supporting Actor. I didn't think he was terrible in Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, but he did seem largely disinterested. And I think that if his character had been developed a little more, I think he could have been really good. As for Michael Douglas being nominated for Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, I didn't think Michael Douglas was bad, or Michelle Pfeiffer, or many of the supporting actors in Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. I actually am kind of surprised that no actors in Shazam! Fury of the Gods were nominated here. But as for Mel Gibson in Confidential Informant, I haven't seen Confidential Informant, so I really can't say. So now on to Worst Supporting Actress. The nominees for this category are Kim Cattrall for About My Father, Megan Fox for Expendables, Bai Ling for Johnny and Clyde, Lucy Liu for Shazam! Fury of the Gods, and Mary Stuart Masterson for Five Nights at Freddy's. Now, I do have to say that Five Nights at Freddy's was one of my worst films of the year. It is very surprising to me that Mary Stuart Masterson, and only Mary Stuart Masterson, was nominated for Five Nights at Freddy's. I didn't think Mary Stuart Masterson was actually that bad in the movie. She wasn't great by any stretch of the imagination. And I said the only reason to watch Five Nights at Freddy's is Matthew Lillard. But I still think nominating Mary Stuart Masterson in this category was a bad move. I would have replaced Mary Stuart Masterson with Julia Louis-Dreyfus in You People. Kim Cattrall in About My Father, I didn't think she was that bad. I definitely could tell she was wearing a wig. And there's a revelation a little bit later, which kind of is hair related with her character without giving too much away. As for Bai Ling and Johnny and Clyde, I can't speak to that one. Megan Fox won for Best Leading Actress for Johnny and Clyde. And it's no surprise there because Megan Fox generally sucks when it comes to acting. As for Lucy Liu and Shazam! Fury of the Gods, again, I hate to sound repetitive, but I didn't think Lucy Liu, Helen Mirren, or for that matter, Rachel Zegler in Shazam! Fury of the Gods were that bad. I actually thought they were pretty good. But Megan Fox won in this category for Expendables, and I think she absolutely deserved to win because I have seen Expendables, and not only was that one of the worst films of 2023, but I was especially harsh on Megan Fox. And the reason I'm so harsh on Megan Fox is because I don't think she wants to act. And it definitely is a testament, the fact that she won for Worst Actress in a Leading Role and Worst Actress in a Supporting Role in the same year for different movies shows that Megan Fox has a lot of soul searching to do. If she does not want to act, I suggest she finds another profession, because I could tell from watching her that she's oftentimes jaded and just not into the role in which she's playing. I'd give her full credit if, like Helen Mirren and Lucy Liu in Shazam! Fury of the Gods, they were giving it everything they had. And yeah, there are some times where Helen Mirren is in a bad film, but she's usually not the weakest link because she's giving it all she has, and she actually cares about her craft. I can't say the same about Megan Fox. Now, I didn't make any predictions for these categories for the Razzies, but I feel like every winner here was appropriate. There are some nominees that I probably would have replaced with others, but overall, I think the winners were largely worth winning, from what I gather, with the exception of the movies, the people who acted in movies that I haven't seen yet, and given the bad reputations of the films, probably never will. Welcome back to Words on Film, the spoken word show dedicated to moving pictures. I am your host and movie critic, Dan Burke. I hope you had a lot of fun with my 11th annual post-Oscars and Razzie show, where I lament about the predictions that I got wrong, but I absolutely celebrate the predictions that I got right. I always have fun doing that show, and it's probably the least preparation other than the tuxedo that I put on every time I do this show. And for those of you who are watching me on live streaming, you know I'm absolutely lying about that tuxedo, and now I've revealed that to the listening audience. But maybe when I develop Words on Film into a television show, which is not an impossibility, maybe that will happen someday, I will wear a tuxedo for my shows about the Oscar nominees and if I pick the winners and so on and so forth. So now that I've reviewed the Oscar nominees and the Razzie nominees in addition to the winners, I'm now going to give you my final segment, which is what's coming up next. This is a spoken word preview of movies that are subject to being released in theaters for the week of March 18th through March 22nd, 2024. And a lot of new movies get released on Friday, but there is one film that's coming out or is subject to be released in theaters on a Wednesday. And normally I don't go over the movies that are going to be released on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday, because they usually are films that are special showings that only air in theaters for one night, usually brought to you by Fathom Events. But this one, the title of the film got me immediately. The title of the film that's coming out, or subject to come out, on March 20th, 2024, is Christspiracy. Yeah, you heard me right. Christspiracy. So this movie is about, it's a documentary, and it's about the moral dimension of humanity's interaction with non-human animals and the industries that profit from their exploitation as informed by world religions. A historical explanation of how the current global situation came to be. So it seems like this movie is not critical of Christianity necessarily, but about all organized religions, particularly those that sacrifice animals. That's interesting. It's not as lampoonish as a documentary like Bill Maher's Religious, but I'd be interested in seeing it if it comes out in the theater near me. It's directed by and written by Kip Anderson and Cameron Waters. It's a movie that I might see. I'm not guaranteeing that I'm going to see it, but if I do, I'll let you know what I think on a future show. Now, as for March 22nd, 2024, there are several movies that are going to be released in theaters or are subject to being released in theaters that day. There are a lot of them here, but I'm going to go over the major ones first. The first one that is probably going to be the biggest hit of the weekend is Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. Now, not only is this a sequel to the first two Ghostbusters from the 80s, but it's also a sequel to Ghostbusters Afterlife, which came out 5 years ago, 3 years ago in theaters. I wasn't crazy about that film, but it did well enough to merit a sequel. And it is about the new Ghostbusters who, when the discovery of an ancient artifact unleashes an evil force, Ghostbusters new and old must join forces to protect their home and save the world from a second ice age. So, reprising their roles from the previous films include Annie Potts, Bill Murray, and Dan Aykroyd. Maybe just, oh yes, Ernie Hudson too, reprising their roles from the original Ghostbusters films. And they made cameo appearances in Ghostbusters Afterlife. And also returning to this film are McKenna Grace, Finn Wolfhard, and Kumail Nanjiani, amongst other people. There are also some new actors like Paul Rudd and Patton Oswalt. And this movie certainly has an impressive cast. It also has Celeste O'Connor, who was previously in Madam Web, which has probably hurt the movie career of Dakota Johnson, but doesn't look like it hurt the career of Sydney Sweeney or Isabella Merced. But, of course, I can't speak to that. Ghostbusters Frozen Empire is a movie that I will see, and I'll let you know what I think on a future show. Another movie that is subject to being released in theaters on March 22nd is a movie that's called Immaculate. And this is a Catholic-themed horror film, which, thank God, is not part of the Conjuring series. Immaculate although like the Conjuring series movies, The Nuns is about a nun. It's about a woman named Cecilia, who is a woman of devout faith, who is warmly welcomed to the picture-perfect Italian countryside, where she is offered a new role at an illustrious convent. But it becomes clear to Cecilia that the new home harbors dark and horrifying secrets. Now, the star of this movie is Sydney Sweeney, who has taken a hit in her career after having been in Madame Web, but this movie might be a rebound for her. In addition to Sydney Sweeney, the movie stars Alvaro Morte, Simona Tabasco, and Benedetta Porcaroli. Now, this is a movie that I will likely see. I can't guarantee that I'm going to love it, but I'll let you know what I think on a future show. The final movie that I'm going to go over that's subject to being released in theaters nationwide on March 22nd is a movie that's called Problemista. This is a movie I know I'll see because it's already been released at a local Nashville theater near me, my favorite theater in Nashville, the Bell Court. This movie, Problemista, is directed by, written by, and stars Julio Torres, who plays Alejandro, who is an aspiring toy designer from El Salvador, who is struggling to bring his unusual ideas to life in New York City. As time runs out on his work visa, a job assisting an erratic art world outcast becomes his only hope to stay in the country. Now, I am 100% behind movies that are written and directed by their stars. Does it guarantee that the movie is going to be great? No, but I always give these movies a chance because it takes a lot of balls to direct a movie. It especially takes a lot of balls to direct a film, write it, and star in it because you're kind of on your own in that respect. I don't know if it's anything that I could ever do, but I certainly give kudos and take my proverbial hat off to people who can do that, especially somebody like Julio Torres, who was not born in America. All the power to you, Julio Torres. I'm not guaranteeing I'll love the film, but I will see it and I'll let you know what I think on next week's show.
Well, that's all the time I have for this episode of Words on Film. I always love talking about movies, and I hope you liked what you heard. If you did, please subscribe and rate the show and leave comments if you can. I would love to get your feedback, even if it's more criticism than praise. This has been Words on Film. I'm Dan Burke, and until my next episode, I'll see you at the movies.